This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
No promises.
No promises on the actual quality of the stories. I'm Gabriel Urbina. I'm here with
Zach
That failure.
Wow.
Man, you're here with no one.
I am here by myself
with voices in your head.
Voices. Wow, this would explain so much from my life, actually. If, like, this entire thing was some kind of, like, gigantic morality play, and the two of you were just, like, my shoulder angel and my shoulder demon, and maybe at some point your papers get, like, turned around, and
right.
The person that used to be playing the angel is now playing the demon, and so on and so forth.
Good omens eat your heart out.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Sarah Shackett.
I'm Zach Valenti. That was fun.
We'll let you decide who is playing what role today. and we are here to do another episode of No Bad Ideas. And in case you are joining us for the first time, welcome. It's so good to see you.
We love you.
Put your feet up. Get yourself a warm beverage of
Relax.
Your choice. Yes. And
it doesn't have to be warm. Could just be a regular beverage.
It
just
happened
to be
here
in
New
cold
York City. So.
City.
That's right.
Hot toddies all around.
So, what we are doing today is this crazy game that we have devised to keep ourselves both amused and also to keep us on our toes as writers, I suppose.
Yeah, because we're all sort of writers and creative types, and we are working on kind of projects that are exciting, but take a little bit of time. So we like doing this because it is basically a creative writing exercise that you can do in 30 minutes with a couple of your friends. And so, Gabrielle, you have brought just a really terrible idea.
So I took some time.
Which we are assuming it's terrible because I haven't read it.
I haven't either.
Yes.
Although there have been some pointed hints while you were off getting your beverage.
Uh-oh.
So I think I know
worry.
A little bit more than you do right now.
It's going to be great. But yes, I'm going to read these guys an article about a really bad idea that somebody had. And then I'm going to set a timer for 30 minutes. And these guys are going to have that much time to figure out how to turn this bad idea into a story. And I cannot tell you, dear listeners, how excited I am to see where this goes, both because I find this to be a really, really interesting idea that somebody had
mm-hmm.
and decided that it was a good idea, but also because I think that there is actually potential here for this to be a good movie on the other side.
Cool.
So, are you guys ready?
No.
We got this, Sarah.
We do not.
I got this.
I like this hubris that is getting displayed here right now.
I'm terrified. Go on.
Okay. Before I go on, listeners, if you look at the show notes for this episode, you're going to find the link to today's bad idea. I strongly encourage you to click on it.
Are there pictures?
So that you can see all of the pictures that accompany this article.
Oh my God, more than one?
There are multiple pictures.
I think this is a first on the show.
I think so.
I think every post has had only one photo. Am I?
Oh boy.
So
I don't like this.
Go to the show notes, click on the link. Trust me, it's going to be amazing. And these guys are not ready.
Oh, boy.
All right. So today's bad idea comes to us courtesy of a Huffington Post article.
Okay.
The headline of which reads, Frenchman shares his home with 400 reptile roommates.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
And then, and by the way, I'm about to butcher some French pronunciation, so I apologize to any of our French listeners. In an unassuming house on France's River Loire, a cobra lives on the coffee table, a 110-pound tortoise roams the gardens, and a 2-meter alligator sleeps in the owner's bed while another keeps watch at the door.
One second.
It's the keeps watch that makes it art.
2-meter alligator sleeps in his bed.
Correct.
Go on.
Oh, we haven't even gotten to the bad part, Zach. Don't worry about it.
I have a we've both spent a lot of time on YouTube. We have a thick exoskeleton that I imagine is going to get punctured very shortly.
Over 2 decades, 67-year-old reptile enthusiast Philippe Gillet has amassed a collection of more than 400 phobia-inducing animals, including rattlesnakes, tarantulas, and lizards in his home in Western France near the city of Nantes.
So that he can live forever? Like, what is what's the end of the goal?
Yeah, right, right.
Gillet says the 2 alligators, named Ali and Gator, were rescued from a leather farm.
Wow. Okay,
but most of the animals are pets that outstayed their welcome elsewhere and have been abandoned or donated.
Okay, okay.
I think it's unfair to treat these animals the way we do because we don't understand them, he told Reuters after feeding chickens to his alligators.
Oh my God.
Yes.
We don't understand them. We hate them. We think they're horrible. But when we get to know them, we can call them over, tell them to come and eat something, for example.
Uh-huh. That is the one thing we can do? Yes?
Yeah.
Gillet says he has all the necessary permits to keep and transport the animals for road shows, which he runs to raise awareness about reptiles.
Okay.
He insists the locals do not mind their unusual neighbors and regularly pop in for coffee, safe in the knowledge that the most dangerous snakes are kept in a room behind 2 sets of doors. But the local fire department is more cautious. They are under instructions not to enter his house in an emergency.
No.
Oh.
That is it.
Wow.
So that was that last sentence was a gift.
Yeah, that last sentence is like so much.
I'm ready.
What are they supposed to do? Burn it more?
I think that they're just instructed to, like, it's basically like a closed ecosystem. Wow. Like you just let whatever happens there happen there.
It would be more dangerous to send folks in than it would to just let whatever happens happen.
Wow.
I mean, and like, can you imagine like the day in the life of the poor firefighter thinks they're ready for everything, gets a call, just like, you know,
right,
and then axes down a door and then like comes immediately into a room with 400 reptiles, tarantulas, other phobia-inducing animals.
Wow. That is something. That is a find, sir.
And give me one moment.
Oh, sure.
Just to set our timer.
Uh-oh, the trap. Whew. Okay,
and
Sarah.
And 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, Zach.
So there's so many places we could take this. This is making me think of a recent, I think it was Reply All, it may have been a different Gimlet podcast, about like a trend in YouTubing history where like this one girl started uploading videos of her pets and then pet YouTube started as a thing. And then there's an arms race to get more interesting pets to keep the viewers happy every week.
Sure. This man has won that
arms
race.
He's won that. Although, to be fair, I have watched several videos on YouTube of a gentleman in South Africa who has 2 adult Bengal tigers that roam his home and also has like small dogs and cats.
Oh my God.
That like have to be kept away from the tigers.
Oh my God.
Right.
So
from the thing that will look at it like lunch.
Yeah. So like my mind is going to several places all at once. You know, oh God, I can't remember the title of this film, but it came out, I think, last year or maybe the year before that, where it was like a couple kids break into a house that's owned by this blind guy, but he turns out to be like...
Oh, yeah. I see this.
Oh, I just thought you were talking about Tippi Hedren's like Roar.
Oh, no, yeah, that's also a good movie.
That's also a good movie.
That is also a good movie. Sarah, you're thinking, I believe it was called Don't Breathe.
Don't Breathe, yes, because like this person who is dealing with a home invader is like blind Liam Neeson.
He's played by Stephen Lang.
Yes.
If that tells you anything. Yes. And yeah, and like the plot is that he's kind of this like retired like special ops person.
And so suddenly these people are thrust into the situation where they are at a complete disadvantage because they do not have the SAS training or like extrasensory ability of this person.
And it is extrasensory. Like, yeah. It's their, like, they realize suddenly that they're kind of stealing from Daredevil.
A little by bit, accident. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you could have a similar horror movie. The last sentence caught my notice when, like, you know, special forces are not special forces, but like
emergency responders.
services will not go into this house.
Right.
And you have people trapped in this house.
I kind of love this movie starting there. If we're doing a movie where it's like we're in a small town, yeah, where all of a sudden there's like a ton of super deadly things, like, you know, like in Ohio, you have to deal, right, with, like, you know, the Australian outback.
Yeah. And the other thing that I think was really conveyed by this article is this man's just sort of like alien perspective on animals, which I think is really cool, because there is a giant problem of people buying cobras and alligators and exotic pets when they're tiny and then can't handle them when they're not tiny.
Yes.
And so it's unfair to the animals, and what do you do with that? And so having someone sort of go on the journey towards becoming the 67-year-old retired man in the Loire Valley who has 400 pets.
And
also a cool story.
And let it not go unsaid that while I think that for all of us in the room,
this would be a bad idea for us.
This would be a very bad idea for us. It seems that this is a real labor of love and, yeah, a real labor of like kindness.
And he's raising,
like, he's doing
awareness
the Lord's work
for,
yes,
you know, animal protection and against animal cruelty, and that's a wonderful thing. So there's like a horror movie we could write, or we could write kind of a sort of more feel good.
You can say Oscar baity. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Or
no.
Is it like an indie summer comedy?
No, like,
it could be an indie summer comedy.
Like a, like, quirky sort,
yeah,
of, like.
Yeah, no.
Oh, John Wes Krasinski Anderson would have fun with this.
He would have fun with this.
But I'm just thinking of the like Little Miss Sunshine movie.
Yeah.
I feel,
yeah,
like you, like, was that?
That was Steve Carell.
Yeah.
Yes.
But who directed?
That was Jonathan Ferris.
Yeah.
And oh gosh, what is her name?
Dayton is her, Valerie,
yes,
Dayton, I believe.
Yes.
Something in more, yeah, that style where Steve Carell plays like.
Sure,
the guy.
Sure. Steve Carell has like a weird emotional like action figure movie coming out. He may as well have one with,
yeah,
snakes.
I was also just having a moment of like, who is the French Steve Carell?
Oh.
And then I realized that it is our friend, whose name I can't remember, from The Artist, Jean Dujardin.
Yeah.
He would have fun living in a house full of reptiles.
He would have fun. Because, like, the thing about...
I love you, John.
Yes. Yeah, no, please. What a smile. Is that, like, he did The Artist, and then he went and, like, did some cop shows. Like, he has some edge to him.
Yes.
Which is kind of nice. So yeah, all right. So if we're sort of going in like indie, you know, Fox Searchlight kind of a direction. Shut up.
I haven't said anything. Continue, please. 24 minutes, by the way.
Thank you.
God damn it.
I guess we need to figure out like at what stage in this man's reptile journey that we are starting the story, and what stage we're going to get to. Is this like his first rescued alligator and how it puts a strain on a relationship that he cares about, or is it like him trying to maybe date or have a child in his life, and there are also like 400 reptiles in his life?
Right.
Like, what calls out to you, Zach?
Like that's one heck of a thing to put on your Tinder profile.
Oh, I know.
Right. Well, so like the storytelling heuristic that's coming to mind is cut as late in as you possibly can.
Okay.
And I just like, I love the idea of like, and I,
Zach, what's the word heuristic mean?
Principle, basically like, okay, rule of thumb.
Cool.
Yeah, like a guideline in this,
yeah,
case.
Yeah, right?
Cool,
yeah.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to flag
that. That was pretentious.
No, it's fine. I just, none of us are pretentious here.
Yeah, right. That's right. No way.
Support us on Patreon. If we get enough support, we're going to buy the pretentious alarm that will go off whenever one of us says something.
Can we please actually have that?
No, because work. The entire show would just be like nonstop.
Right.
Yeah. A single continuous shrill tone.
The idea of cutting to this person as late in their development as possible. Well, so maybe actually having Steve Carell play this person.
Well, so I'm just like, right, like smoke is coming out of the house and like, you know, like it's nobody's going in. Like they're just watching it burn. They're like, should we go in? Nah. Doc says, like, you know, like,
right.
Like
yeah,
headquarters
this
says
is a
no way.
Zone.
And like you see like a giant alligator like walking out of the fire.
This
and you
just
see,
became an action movie.
Like, well, no, you just like it's a very quiet but like ridiculous, absurd opening of just like
okay.
You know, fire at night with like these like tarantulas
night,
like crawling
Jesus.
Out. Right, just like all the creatures getting loose in this small town,
uh-huh.
And this man like mourning the loss of his collection and like his connections.
So it's not about living
having
with
to
his
round
collection.
Them up and like. All the people's lives interrupted by like the tarantula that's on Timmy's pillow now because it like snuck into the next door plot.
So you're kind of going for a like
maybe Lars and the Real Girl with like just like somebody who doesn't fit in their world in a small town.
But suddenly kind of, it's spilled
and it's like,
over.
Right.
And people have to deal with it.
And you're kind of going for like what I think we all thought the first Fantastic Beasts movie was going
yeah,
to be of kind of
actually,
a like.
I didn't see
it's
that.
This,
was it good?
Well,
I heard really mixed things.
I haven't seen the new one. The first one yeah. I think is. Okay.
But it is but not necessarily about Fantastic
no,
Beasts.
No, and I think that we all thought that it was going to be Newt Scamander, magic zoologist, shows up in New York and has to round up all these animals. And it's actually much more of kind of a like noir-ish
mystery
movie.
Yeah.
But you're proposing something that is closer to what I thought we were getting with that first movie of kind of a like, hi, I'm so-and-so. Events transpired so that my 400
right.
reptile... arachnid and other, you know, phobia-inducing animals have just been unleashed onto the small town, this like small French town population, 4,000
yeah.
people.
Right.
And
I'm down
we
to
now
keep
have
it
to,
there.
Like,
I'm
round
like
them up.
Not attached, but I think it would play better at the festivals if we kept it in France.
I was going to put it
like
in
expat.
Our favorite town in California, Solvang.
Solvang, that's
which,
funny.
If anybody doesn't know, Solvang is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful little town in California. It's a couple of hours north of LA. It is, if you are anywhere within driving distance of Solvang, it is worth a visit. Because it was a Danish colony that created the town. And so you go there and it is this town in the middle of Southern California that has windmills
yeah.
and kind of all of these
like
amazing
Holland and
yes.
Copenhagen and
right.
brightly colored doors and stuff. It's a little bit like Epcot, but a town.
Yes. It is delightful. So you want to unleash 400 alligators, snakes, etc.
I don't know that I want to do that because like you have a problem if that's how your movie opens. Your sympathy is with the townsfolk
mm-hmm.
whose lives have been interrupted and not necessarily with the gentleman who kept
interesting
these 400
so,
reptiles.
So then I would say like start with like a little boy falling in love. Like you have to anchor it in like something
yeah.
that's like the love of weird creatures.
Yeah,
so
like,
then
totally.
You can go to the loss of like your
right.
family.
5-year-old kid stops the other kids who are all older than him
from killing a little reptile,
injured snake
and, like,
or something.
Nurses it back to health. Kind
cut
of a
to
thing.
60 years later, and we see him sort of getting up in the morning, and we follow him around the house as he does his morning routine. But then
which
you
involves
know,
feeding tarantulas.
Yes,
and, like,
and
right.
you got to
yeah,
throwing
yeah.
the chickens to the alligators.
Exactly.
Right.
And sort of has like a very because like if you have that sort of perspective on the natural world, it's like really interesting because it involves a lot of death and killing and like feeding chickens and frozen mice and stuff.
Mm.
Like it's not necessarily this benevolent, wholesome puppy perspective, but it's
right.
a cool one, you know?
And it is a perspective of treating the animal on the animal's terms.
Exactly.
And giving
right.
it what the animal
yeah.
needs, maybe the right word or it might not, but
right.
kind of taking it in on its own terms.
Not trying to warp the animal to a function that it does not have or understand.
Right.
And
as my cat snores loudly,
which is the correct function for cats.
That is correct.
So yeah, I'm down to definitely have a boiler explode and like mayhem.
Right,
at
but
some
maybe
point.
Not frame.
But maybe
one.
Not.
Yeah,
maybe not frame one.
I like sort of like what as you guys were both creating that, I was like, huh, maybe it's like less like cartoony because it wouldn't be a cartoon, but like that beginning of Up where it's like kind of quiet. and it just takes you through like a lifetime of experience,
the
and it's like
up, right. Don't get us started.
It's like that, but for like you know, sort
And like there
boy
can,
falling in love with lizards.
See, and I like that though because there can be like a little bit of resistance at first. Like he kind of like, you know, is like a young man and he rescues the two alligators from the alligator farm.
Yeah.
He's kind of this like, all right, I'm gonna
take
be
care
that
of these.
Guy that takes care of the two alligators. And then, you know, sometime later,
but was
like
it Gator or Allie first.
I think they were both together at the same time.
Yeah, okay. No, I think the, they came as a pair.
And then, like, sometime later, like, someone comes by and is like, hey, so, you know, we've got this rattlesnake and we can't take care of it. Would you like to? And
right.
He's just kind of like,
no, I would not like that at all.
I can't do it.
And
then
he,
it's sort of this like,
no one else is going to.
No one else is going to. He's kind of like,
right.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
No, and then it's a story about him, like, finally learning to stand up for himself and say no.
Well, maybe, but I do like the idea of kind of like if you're seeing it in sort of like the upstyle montage that takes us all the way to when he's like in his 60s and living in a house full of reptiles.
Yeah.
You can sort of have like the first one, he has a lot of resistance. The second one, he's slightly less resistance. By third time, you know, it's like ding dong, opens the door, and somebody's holding a tarantula. He's just kind of like, just
bring
it on
in.
The table. Yeah.
I think you can still have the learn to say no arc.
I think you
that,
can too.
If you do that.
Yes.
But I like that as a progression for our up opening montage scored by Michael Giacchino, but with reptiles.
And maybe that's like when, as they're rounding up the things after they get out, he's like, I have a new life. He like discovers a new life while they're getting found. And like finds his passion for like chocolatiering or something. I don't
Jesus.
Know. And I think we might have to unpack more about like what's motivating this person. What are his like? What does he want? What does he need? I'm like thinking back to like the basics of what I remember from my screenwriting courses of like thinking through the person's arc.
Yeah. So we have. I guess we sort of need to decide opening. Sequence and sort of explosion set piece, which I think we've established aside.
inciting incident is sort of like, I feel like what we have.
Okay, in 1 second.
What is the inciting
what is an
incident?
Inciting incident?
Oh, right. Wow, words are hard. Terminology.
An inciting incident is basically like the thing that kicks the story off. Like, you're watching a movie like Die Hard and John McClane is getting on a plane to go see his wife and kids. But the inciting incident is really like when the terrorists show up and take the building hostage.
In Star Wars, it's probably what? Skywalker buying the droids and kind of like them getting like seeing the message?
Yeah, I think it's seeing the message for sure.
Got it. So it's sort of like what kicks everything into action.
Yeah. Right. In The Matrix, it's like, wake up, Neo.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, sure.
And here it would be kind of like all the animals escape and now there is a thing that we need to do.
Right. It's like you're in a previous like situation of sort of like everything's level and easy peasy.
Right, we see him go about his day.
Right.
We spend time with him gathering this collection.
The routine isn't interrupted.
Yeah, and the routine is interrupted. Cool.
I kind of tend to think of those inciting incidents as the moment when you kind of realize like, oh, this is what the movie is going to be.
Yes.
Like before it, there's kind of like, okay, I have a character, I have a situation, I have a place.
What could happen is up in the air.
It could be that.
Yeah.
The inciting incident happens and then you kind of go, oh, okay, this is going to be about getting all of our reptile and insect friends back.
Yeah, and having them not be killed or treated the way humans tend to treat scary animals.
Indeed. And I mean, like, I think that, like, inevitably, this needs to be a movie about kind of someone who really, really responds to the idea of, like, these are animals who are not seen for...
Yeah, what they really are.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and so obviously this is a person who isn't really seen for who he really is or who she really is. I'm going to take a drink of my water now.
I'm
as
curious.
As she does that, 13 and a half minutes.
Okay, we're fine.
Yeah, we got this.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, like,
there's a wonderful dog outside our window.
Oh, man.
You're hearing that. We
this
apologize.
Is just going to be the animal show. And
this is the animal
it.
Show. It's very appropriate, yes.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what you think this guy's sort of deal is. Like, what are you interested in, like, the person that we've sort of begun to explore working through in this movie?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think that, like, This can either be sort of a, it's just, no, it's fine. There's just conflict everywhere in the world, there you is. Guys. You know, a couple things could occur to me. You could either have sort of a person who gets the natural world as kind of a crutch and a way of sort of working around the fact that he doesn't get people. And, you know, having his ecosystem disrupted, basically, would force him to interface and interact with humans in a way he might not have done in many, 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 many years. And so there's that kind of story you could tell of this person teaching people about these animals, but also getting taught something about human beings as well. You could have, like, you know, two alligators are a great, you know, it's just basically 101 Dalmatians meet cute, but with alligators, you could do that.
I kind of really like that.
I know, right?
That's amazing.
I've had that in my mind since you read the idea. It's just like you sort of go a little punch drunk love.
Yeah.
And just sort of two souls that are right for each other that are matching colors just call out because, you know, he finds someone who helps him round up his friends. There's also a world where, like, he works through that he doesn't, like, sort of what you were talking about, that this is a freeing opportunity and he sort of lets go of all of these creatures that he was taking care of and realizes that, you know, maybe he needs to be taken care of instead or something like that. Like, there are lots of different arcs we could trace.
Can we unpack the meet cute for a minute?
Before we do that, can I throw a
Please.
Stone into the pond and see if you guys like these ripples or if you're going to be like, nah, those are stupid ripples. Don't do those.
I kind of want to hear the meet cute, but also I'm here for stones.
Yeah, all right. Go.
So how would you guys feel about making this a animated film?
I'd be fine with that.
Told from the perspective of the animals, who, mind you, probably most of them have never interacted with any other human being. So they think that human beings have this particular relationship with them. And then now they're suddenly out in the wild and they are discovering.
That's a little Dr. Doolittle for me, bro.
All right.
But I appreciate the perspective swap. I do.
Sure.
It's a fun idea. I watched that movie.
I think that there is something to sort of the idea of, like, the alligator that has no idea how, like, 99% of humanity views them. And likewise, sort of like all of these, like, phobia-inducing things that just, like, think that they are...
Yeah.
Right, they think lovable they're sweet, and charming. Fluffy. Yeah.
No, and I think that's funny for about 15 minutes.
Sure.
Like, I've watched the Madagascar films. They are funny for about 15 minutes.
Fair enough.
Love you, Madagascar.
Yeah, real takes. Okay, back to the meet cute then.
Yeah.
And this is not a meet cute between alligators.
Oh,
between
no.
People.
Between people.
Right.
That involves.
It's not
alligators.
Like Allie and Gator find each
Although,
other.
Although, I
in
would
the
watch
of
that
field.
Movie too. Two, is, like, homeschooled alligators going to college for the first time.
They don't know how to alligator.
They don't know how to alligator. Yeah.
There would probably be a lot of, like, pointed barbs about crocodiles.
Yeah, there would.
Oof. I mean,
their ridges are just so different. how to engineer a meet cute with alligators. And unfortunately, like, and 101 Dalmatians has already covered the falling into the pond. Like,
I
that's
know,
perfect.
But that changes, that goes a little bit differently if there's alligators
there's,
in the pond, though.
There's a thriller
though.
Element to it.
Oh, man.
Right.
No, but I think, you know, you could have switch it to the perspective of, like, the meet cute E, like the other person, and, like, their terrifying experience running from a gator in the park that ends in, like, this person who they think saves them. And so they have a very particular perspective on them. And then it turns out that they're, like, a reptile whisperer. And they like this person now, but they also have this thing about them that is kind of hard to get through, and sort of the film becomes like working through that relationship and either coming to be accepted by the Gators or stepping back a little bit from the reptiles. I don't know how that would go, but I could see like sort of kind of like a rescue sequence that turns into, oh, you're on the animal side. Got
right,
it.
Right, right.
What do you think, Zach?
I like the idea that one person would own Allie and one person would own Gator.
Own Gator, and they find and each like, other at long last.
Right, like I don't know where we're setting this anymore, but just like the thing gets out of the barn. And they've got to chase it down, and you're using the GPS tracker, and they like finally they
find the wrong gator.
Well, no, they like find it like canoodling with like the neighbor's gator.
Oh, sure.
Okay, so one second.
I guess we're in Florida, and people have gators as pets.
Okay.
So like someone loses their alligator, they
right like
search for it and find another gator.
I think this would be the adaptation of this story where it's not like they are 400. Like sure. Species person
okay,
anymore.
Like we are they're just leaving like, that part of it behind.
Well, I'm not sure.
For the time being.
Yeah.
I think I like
to explore this idea.
Right. I think I might want to mosey on back and TikTok.
Sure, sure.
But like,
no worries.
Just to play it out.
You've still got 6.5 minutes.
Okay.
So much time.
Yeah. Basically, like, I think if we're going to do the meet cute, it's like the gator people get introduced to each other.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you know, I don't know how we'd have to do some research into how far can a gator run and how fast to see like
very
logistically
far, very
like
fast I think
yeah like right like basically like how realistic is it that this gator would sniff out a nearby gator, and how far away enough could it be that it's ostensible that these people would have never met
I don't know.
I wouldn't worry about that too
I'm
much.
Not worried about that at all.
Okay.
The Everglades are quite large,
yeah,
and gators can travel quite quickly by water.
They
nice
can.
I just like that idea of like, then there's like, you know.
Then what? Then it's sort of a, how do we make this work with two pets, or like, sort of, what? Yeah, sort of.
Maybe the people can't. What were you gonna say?
No, that's sort of where I was gonna go. Is maybe like the gators get along real well, but the people don't.
Oh man, we're going to the same place.
Boy.
We're like, how do you keep the gators together?
Right, even though your relationship isn't working out.
I really like this direction. I'm willing to let go of them for that. That's fun.
Oh boy.
Like I don't know. I guess like there are two stories that I feel like have been somewhat fleshed out.
Mm-hmm.
There's that one where it's like basically like,
the
can
love
we make
story
it work
between,
for the gators?
Okay,
right.
Uh-huh.
Like, can we make it work for the sake of the gators?
Right,
sort of like,
right.
The like meta romance between the pet owners. And then there's like the like elderly coming of age story.
Uh-huh.
Of
this guy who has sort of been trapped in his own reptile ecosystem for a really long time.
And uh-huh.
The reptiles get out, and that forces him to interact with humanity. And sort of like the movie that's coming to mind, weirdly, is Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
Ooh. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it's a wonderful book. And the film is not bad either. And it's about a young boy who sort of goes on a like this treasure search for meaning quest throughout New York City, and it is sort of eventually revealed that it's tied to his father who died in the September 11th attacks.
Oh wow!
And it's really heartfelt and wonderful, but is sort of like this very grief stricken. Boy coming out of his shell through interacting with a bunch of strangers in New York, and by like searching for keys to a lockbox that he found and stuff. And so it could be something like that, but sort of an older fellow who's looking for tarantulas. And you know, sort of just like a journey around the neighborhood, meeting different folks and sort of receiving surprising amounts of weirdness, but also kindness and
right.
People like sort of a community learning to take him on his own terms.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that like the key for that would be that like you really need to feel
for both the man and for the animals. Yes. Like, you cannot sort of have a drop of cynicism in that.
No, it really cannot. And so you really need to spend, like, that opening montage has to be up level emotional.
In some ways, I feel like I want to watch the Meet Cute movie more, but I would want to make the other one more.
Interesting. Mm. Why?
I think because I am like a hopeless earnest. Like, yeah, just like, I'm just like, oh, that sounds so cool. Like, yeah. An outsider weirdo guy, like being exposed and having to like become a part of his community. Like, that sounds like something challenging.
No, and I think that there is something cool about, this is a man that lives with everybody's phobias.
Yes.
Or the things that trigger everybody's phobias.
Right, right, right.
That means that he probably has some phobias of his own to things that people find very quotidian and very inoffensive.
I think that I feel like I'd grow more as a person, as an artist, writing that movie than I would writing the Meet Cute. But
and the thing to figure out with the romance of, like, we're trying to make this work for our pets, is you kind of have to figure out, like, well, okay, are the pets a metaphor for children, or like what?
And I would also,
what is the emotional stakes of that?
I'm very curious about why aren't they getting along?
Yeah.
Are they, you know, one of them's a carnivore, one of them's a vegetarian, you know, sort of what is.
Right. One of them is keeping gators because it's awesome, and one of them is because, like, for the conservation aspect to it, and like,
right,
you're feeding your gator Cheetos, what's going on?
I like that, though. I like kind of the incompatibility having directly to do with, like, the perspective on how they see the animals.
Yeah, exactly, because otherwise, like, lots in common, right?
Right. if anything, kind of a, like, you would probably want to really hold on to the person.
See, exactly.
I think that maybe I don't agree with that, and I'd be curious, you're thinking about, like, keep, and I don't know.
In the minute and a half that we have left.
Oh, sure. We should probably just pick one of these ideas.
Yeah.
We can finish this thought, after we're done, once the timer's off.
If I remember.
We can come back to that.
Okay. Which one do you think?
I also kind of lean towards, like, quirky neighborhood adventure, just because that's a structure I can understand. Mm. It's just, like, you probably have, like, five sort of supporting characters of varying ages and perspectives that this gentleman is going to interact with in order to find his pets. And like, I can sort of, I see this idea and I'm like, okay, that's a script that I could write if I was put to it. Whereas the romance with wildly different perspectives on animals, like, I think I need to do a little bit more thinking on.
Mm-hmm. And then they found out at the end that they've changed and learned a lot. I'm like waiting for the timer to run out.
You still have a little bit of time.
Okay.
No, but like, no, but
I'm with, like, you. I
honestly
feel
like I think this is a, and you can have this wonderful parallel construction of, like, him getting over a fear and the person he's interacting with getting over, like, an animal fear, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And sort of how, sort of like, we get through phobias together, kind of a message. Like, I think that would be pretty cool. Oscar bait. Definitely Oscar bait.
It's heartwarming
and
AF.
Time.
Wow.
All right. Well done, you guys.
Damn.
You covered Paramount. A lot of material
we
there.
Did.
Jeez.
Okay, but I am curious to return to
this
question that you had, Zach.
Yeah.
So What was the matter on hand of why we didn't
I think it was that I don't agree that the best story to tell with the, like, meet cute would necessarily be on their, like,
having different perspectives on
the animals.
Okay.
If that means that, like, one of them is, like, a shitty parent. Because then it becomes a custody battle.
I don't think that it necessarily needs to be a shitty
parent.
Yeah.
I want to avoid the custody battle movie with
Sure.
And have it be more inane or more like just human, like, just like, ugh, like, you know, chemistry's hard, like, we just don't make sense. Right. But also, like, one gator's enough for one person. Like,
and if it's a custody battle, I want it to be, these are both, like, two equally valid perspectives duking it out.
Right.
That I'm more interested in.
Sure.
Absolutely. That I'm okay with.
Sure.
No, I think that's a good thing to flag.
I don't want it to be, like, the alligators and one human versus the bad person that's being an idiot.
Yeah.
No, because at that point, you're just punching down at a straw man. And
yeah, and that's not fun right. after a certain point. Also funny for 15 minutes and then
right, it's
on.
Yes. Fine short, but it's not what you want for a feature.
No.
Yeah, no, I think that, but I like this idea of like people having, maybe one of them treating a gator sort of like a human and the other person being like, no, it's an animal.
Right.
Like yes. that's the kind of thing where it's like, okay, that's a philosophical difference.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. I guess
what an idea, Gabriel.
Right. My trouble with having it be like about that is then it just, but maybe that's what you want. It divides up the audience based on like
yeah.
who they identify more with. Yeah. I just feel like it would end up being really obvious who the better parent would be.
No, you would have to be very careful, like right. to sort of present the best version of both viewpoints, you know.
See, I'm trying
right.
I'm trying to think about movies about parenting where there is sort of that like no, these are two equal but opposing
right.
forces.
I just can't think of
it's
one.
You, it's on the top it's of my pretty head. Hard.
I haven't seen Kramer versus Kramer in a very in a long time.
I don't remember that movie well at yeah. all.
The Parent Trap wasn't really about parenting.
No, that movie's about a lot of things, but not parenting.
Yes. Before we take a break, I just want to take one more second to just like acknowledge while Mr. Gillet, and I am inevitably like butchering his last name, I think that I've said about three different ways yeah. since the start of the podcast. While his life is a very, very extreme one and a very, very different one than the ones that we would choose, which is why it strikes us as a good thing to mine for conflict and for very extreme situation. I just want to like point out the extraordinary respect that I have for this
yes,
man and that he absolutely. Seems
actually,
to be doing
though.
Amazing, amazing work.
And the fact that I think that comes through in his quotes and in the way the article is written, and I think that probably affected where we went with the story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, wherever you are, I
hope... Don't buy illegal reptiles.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Okay. Let's take a break and we'll be right back.
Right, now that we are taking a break for just a second from all of that.
from all the reptile-induced indeed, chaos.
Indeed, indeed. Let's talk about other kinds of chaos. Specifically, the kind of chaos that we would like to do more of on this show and other shows.
Hopefully a very controlled, entertaining
indeed,
chaos.
Indeed, indeed. And the way to help us make more of this show and more of other shows that we would like to do happen is to come join us on our Patreon.
It's where you can support us most directly and something we'd really appreciate. And
yeah, so we just wanted to take some time to plug that. There's fun rewards and cool things going on there. And more cool things on the way in December. Stay tuned for that.
NoBadIdeasPodcast.com/support will take you right to the Patreon page. And if you're not familiar, Patreon is a membership platform for creators like us
mm-hmm.
to monetize directly with the people who want stuff from us, which is ostensibly you.
Yeah. Hopefully.
It lets you do recurring donations for every new episode that we come out. So if you're listening to this and you're kind of going, yeah, these hour-long plus episodes are worth $1, you can go to Patreon and sign up to give us $1 a show. Or if you decide that they are worth more than that, you can sign up to give however much your heart tells you is the right amount.
And if you are not in a position to give us any of your money, no worries at all.
You're just as welcome here as everybody else.
And a thing that you could do that would really make a difference in our lives is to go find No Bad Ideas on iTunes and rate and especially review us. It helps more people find the show. It taunts and tempts the algorithm to promote
yep.
us to more people.
The robots think we're cool
yeah.
when you say good things.
And it also just like fills us with
I know.
Warm, happy
some of the reviews that
feelings.
We've gotten have been really nice, you guys. Thank you
yes.
so much
oh, we
for
should
sending
start
them.
Reading them. in this part. We won't do that now because
we haven't prepared.
See, if we start doing that, though, someone is going to start sending us messages. Someone is going to start. Like,
you know what? That's a great bad idea. Don't do that.
Wow, that's so funny. The message that's like, help, I'm trapped in Apple.
Right. Help, I'm trapped in a review factory.
But seriously, any support that you can give us so that we can keep making the show and make other shows would be really, really appreciated. So rate us and review us on iTunes. And if you can, please come support us over on Patreon.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And that's not all, however.
Oh, no.
We also want to do a nice turn for all of you guys, just for being here and for listening to us. And we're still in the month of November, which means that a lot of us are still working on long overdue writing projects in the forms of novels, scripts, other assorted media challenges that we are putting together before the end of the month.
Indeed.
And when you're doing that, you want to be as agile and as productive as you possibly can be. And sometimes that means writing not just with your fingers on a keyboard, but just by speaking out loud. Sometimes it is much easier to get an idea out by just verbalizing it,
just
and putting
it
into the air around you.
Yeah, and that's why we're partnering with one of my favorite online services, Rev.com, which I've personally spent hundreds of thousands of bucks on over the years.
Hundreds of thousands?
Okay, all right. I'm sure it's been like several thousand over the years. It's definitely been multiple hundred.
All right.
I think there's no way it's not several thousand, just because I've used them for years. Mm-hmm. They're a transcription service. It's real, honest to God human beings, although they did just introduce an algorithm you can do the instant translate, but then they also have a person do it.
Good.
And it starts at like $1 a minute, it's just a great deal for great service that I need a lot, and anybody who's working in media or really just wants to talk something out and then read the thing that they said without having to do a lot of correction.
And really, guys, like, most of writing happens inside your head.
This is so true.
And any way that, like, 90% of writing is all about, like, what is going on between your two ears. And any way that you can get it from there to on paper, whether that is writing it yourself or speaking it out loud and then having a service put it into paper for you, really, like, you know, what matters is that you get there at the end of the day.
And if you want us to cover your first 10 minutes at Rev.com, we got you with our special link at nobadideaspodcast.com/Rev.
That's nobadideaspodcast.com.
Oh, did I say .com?
They're finger gunning right now.
.com/ R-E-V.
That's right.
That was fun.
We should do that more often with more practice and better sync.
Yes, we should.
Let's go back to anything else.
Back, everybody.
All right.
Okie dokie. So, how's everybody doing? What do you guys want to talk about today for our second half of the show?
Yeah, well, we sort of checked in last time, and then the time before that, we had some questions that we answered, and less Tiffy snoring, but, you know, Tiffy snoring's always good. So maybe more questions
this
time?
She has a condition.
Sure.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah.
And I guess if anybody has the question of what condition does my cat have, it's called chronic rhinitis, and it's just gross, and it means she sniffles a lot.
I'm really glad that you shared that.
Yeah, Zach. With everyone.
You know, just in case people wanted to know.
This is
inquiring
minds. People are
going
to look this up now.
Yes, people are going to Google, and there's going to be images. And
I really hope not. It's not worth it, you guys. I mean, unless your cat is
having
trouble breathing.
That is what you can take away from us here at No Bad Ideas. It's not worth it.
What question?
So wait a moment. Are you saying
actually
that this is a bad idea?
Oh boy.
So questions.
Yes.
So I guess we have a lot of questions we could answer, mm-hmm. and thank you everybody for sending it in.
Please send in more.
The one that that I've been grappling with that sort of came in through the Twitter mm-hmm. is this question of how to write with ADD, ADHD.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working on a script on it for my YouTube channel. And
on a script specifically about addressing this issue?
Exactly. Like to answer that question of like how to write with ADHD. And so spoiler, I think that it's probably as useful for people with ADHD as without ADHD. Like
whatever, right?
I would imagine so, yeah.
Like I think like I have a lot of sort of ideas and mostly I have a lot of questions for the both of you. I think the first thing that I've gotten in the course of learning about writing since college,
mm-hmm.
Which I feel like has been actually learning how to write, not just as a student, but like as a person. Like it's not just for like credit, you know, it's just mm-hmm. self-directed sort of projects is, and this is, I think what most of the video that I'm writing about is going to like sort of be around is where I've felt like I'm failing as a writer is where I've had an expectation of what it looks like to be a good writer.
Hmm.
And working with
let that go.
The two of you guys has really taught me a lot.
Because we do not look like good writers. Like our presentation right. in no way.
That was supposed to sound like a compliment. The point is that like...
We know. We appreciate that.
We do.
And I think one of the specific things that I don't know if you've like keyed into that like is actually surprising to me. Because I don't think I've ever told you, is this phenomenon of like, I never, ever, ever lived up to the expectation that I've had of whoever wrote The Alchemist, I forget his name.
Paulo Coelho.
That guy. I listened to this incredible interview with him where he's just like so smart. He makes so much sense where he just mm-hmm. like spends 5 hours a day just like writing and whatever he gets done in that 5 hours is just like it or something like right. that.
Yeah, sure.
And every day he wakes up and does that and it's just his life is so simple and it's so clear.
That does sound Coelho-esque.
And it's like clearly that there's a lot of wisdom in that. And at the same time, like, I don't know. I just like I feel like I thrive differently.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing your sort of natural pattern and hearing you talk about it, Gabrielle, and I feel like we've all shared this too. I remember specifically talking about this with Gabrielle most recently
mm-hmm.
of like, I like you just owning personally, like how you just aren't the kind of person that writes a little bit every day. You're the kind of person that like has it on the back burner all the time.
I desperately wish I was, but
like,
I'm not.
Floods out yes. and like, a little bit and like that is just how I naturally seem to tick more as a writer. That said, like I've last year sort of like got this like idea in my head that maybe my problem was my writing tools, which is like not true, mm-hmm. except that like I went and like built a keyboard that actually is really helpful for me to like run around New York City between like all my commuting time and other time.
Well, then it was helpful.
Yeah, right. And I just don't want to leave listeners with like, oh, my tools are what's broken. But like, I think it's not like the keyboard that's been as helpful as just like starting to own more readily like what works and doesn't work for me.
Sure.
And I feel like you modeling like a certain degree of confidence and just like writing the way you friggin' write, even if it's not like matching up the ideal that you have. That was just liberating for me to see somebody so confident in their own style.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I don't always feel confident in it.
Which is funny because you don't ever talk about not feeling confident. So I assume because my silly brain fills in the gap.
Of course, of course.
Which is like, oh, maybe that's what confidence is not talking about my insecurities with everybody all the time. And then they'll think that I'm actually not insecure.
But then we'll start a podcast where we talk about how we feel insecure and the entire plan will just come down like a house of cards.
No. Here we are.
Step three, profit.
Oh, man.
No, you know, I think that I've talked a little bit about...
Sorry, Sarah, what's step two?
I mean, talk owning all of your insecurities on a podcast. Yeah. That's the goal, right?
Right. Like, step one, seem really cool and secure.
Right.
Step two, address how utterly that is a lie.
I see.
Step three.
Wow. We have a real better racket than those underpants gnomes. Yeah. Anyway. Moving on.
What a reference. I'm so proud of you right now. Anyway, you were about to say smart things.
No, I was about to say things. Let's aim those expectations downwards. No, but, you know, I think that I've talked about in the past about especially the last year of Wolf 359, which was a year when I was recovering from a lot of stress-related conditions that the previous year of Wolf 359 had given me, was a lot of kind of letting go of the parts of myself that beat me up for being the way that I am. And I feel that, like, most writers watch that scene in The Two Towers where it's like Gollum beating up on Smeagol.
Oh my God.
And there's a lot of, like, self-identification and a lot of kind of that, like, you know, you don't have any friends. You're like, why does this, like, really strike a chord? And, you know, and I felt that I went through a year in 2017 that was very much about, like, let go of kind of that, like, Gollum Smeagol beating yourself up for how you could be, thinking about how you should be dynamic, and just kind of embrace a little bit of kind of a, like, don't worry about whether this is the way that it should be. Worry about helping yourself do the thing the way that you do the thing. And that led to a lot of kind of, like, just, you know, if all of the writing happens on the last day, but it happens, maybe don't beat yourself up about it. Maybe.
Oh, God.
No, and I.
Sorry. Not
and
really.
And I think that, like, the key to it, though, is that you can't just assume that everything is just going to happen on the last day, because that's the way that it usually happens. You still need to kind of go, like, this week, see, I'm going to block off these 5 hours.
That's where I get trapped, is, like, I sort of know myself, and that, like, the last 2 days is when it happens.
Hmm.
But I still, like, in order for that to be the case, I still have to stress out about it for the first 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, and it's a weird sort, like, of, it's a weird process,
yeah,
though. Yeah.
Like, I can't let it go and just sort of know that, like, my brain is cooking in the back. Like, it involves, like, sort of feeling bad about myself at 10 at night when I haven't written anything yet, and just sort of, like, staring angrily at the outline and then going to bed. Like,
and this, I think, is the next gear that I think that we are all trying to get to, which is finding the balance of, okay, so you have a week to write this thing. You are probably, you know that most of the writing is going to happen Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Emphasis on the Saturday, Sunday, probably.
Yeah. That magic hour between, like, 11 p.m. and 5 a.m.
Oh, yes.
So much happens in that quiet time.
You can't give yourself Monday through Thursday off. You can't just be like, well, I'm going to go to the beach. You still need to kind of, like, give yourself the time to be present and to kind of, like, tell your brain, like, brain, between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m., that is your time to think about this thing.
Right.
And I think that the real magic trick and the thing that takes years to kind of navigate through is doing all of that without going to bed on Tuesday going, oh my God, I didn't write a single word. Oh my God, I was so all over the place. I was so unfocused. I didn't, you know, like, I didn't really open the
document once. I'm the worst.
Instead,
like, trust the process. Like, you
know, still investing in it.
And I'm still giving it time and still sort of just, like, acknowledging kind of, like, even if I'm not actively doing something, I'm still sitting down to be present for it, which is very different from just going to the beach. Yeah.
No, indeed. Although, sometimes.
Sometimes the beach is the necessary thing.
Sometimes the beach is the necessary thing. I'm curious something about, Zach, is that I'm curious about you unpacking sort of like what you mean by ADD, ADHD.
So
like,
glad you asked.
What, yes, that is actually a very good like,
I realize we kind of blew past address. It.
Yeah, because yeah. like sort of we're sort of talking generally about cat snores and and also like general, I think, writing insecurity.
Sure, sure.
But I know that, you know, there are sort of particular hangups that people sort of feel that like they're not even writing right, they're not thinking right. And yeah. I'm curious, like, how would you define a challenge that is made more challenging by ADD, ADHD? Well,
so before we even get to the challenge, I think my problem with the language of ADD, ADHD is like attention deficit disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think only shows up in the context of, you know, sort of like the kind of work environments that have been commonplace, like industrialized education.
Yes.
Sure.
Where like, I think, you know, you like put me back in an older context of, say, hunting, you know, like survival, working the land. Like, I think the attentional style that showed up as a problem in a classroom setting would be a benefit. I just think that ADD is something, and ADHD is something we'll look back like 100 years from now and be like, wow, that was like really dumb to call it like an illness so much as to acknowledge neurodivergence as mm-hmm. an idea that sure. we're not all the same in our neurochemistry and our, you know, our brains have variants, and it like to look at it better or worse is to like miss the picture of sort of, you know, the genius of being human, period.
Beautiful.
Indeed.
And inside of that view, you know, how do you write with neurodivergence? Well, you discover for yourself what works for you. And I think that there's a lot to, you know, like the practice of journaling, like as a way of, you know, sort of tracking, like, what have you tried? What, you know, how is it going? What would you improve? You know, so, mm-hmm. So yeah, I think some of the quotes that come to mind when I think about writing with, you know, if you suspect you might be attentionally divergent from most of the population and might be diagnosable with ADD,
mm-hmm.
ADHD, you know, I think writing as a form of thinking, and writing not to capture something that you think is brilliant and worth sharing, but to figure out what you have to say, has been incredibly useful for me in navigating my own mind and my own, you know, sort of style. So I don't know if this is answering the question or
no. Totally. Do you find that you journal consistently?
So the more that I've made it easy to do, mm-hmm. and I've like recently sort of thrown out like the like hodgepodge system that I used to have, where I like I'd write some notes in this app and I'd like do other things in email and I do other yeah. things over here. Like, I now have like one system where everything goes.
Mm-hmm.
And then a calendar separate to that. And I feel like I've been refining that process over a lot of time, and it looks radically different recently, but it's been like years and years and years of incremental improvements.
That's awesome, man.
It feels really good. And I'm excited to like be writing again, not just as like something that I do like once in a while, but like on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it isn't sitting down for 5 hours every day in the same window of time after the same morning routine, like that I just kind of feel like isn't me. And I like feel like I've done a lot of violence to myself for not being that person by default.
And I think that there's something to be said for, you know, we hear these stories about, you know, whoever, like, P.G. Woodhouse would, like, you know, sit at the desk where he wrote his, like, 98 novels and 400 short stories. And every day from, you know, like, 10:16, as soon as he finished his tea, to 4:17, when, like, the dinner bell got rung, he would write. And he would, you know, barely put his pen down. And there's this element of kind of, like, yes, this was true from ages 47 to 68,
yeah.
when he was an established novelist, when he had no concerns about, say, the stability of his home, when he had no concerns about the stability of his income, when he had no concerns about his immediate family situation, when he had no sort of shifting immediate circumstances that he had to deal with. And especially when his sense of value, his sense of the worth of what he was doing, when the sense of kind of like how much he would be rewarded for these things that he was producing had already been very, very thoroughly proven by being a successful novelist and a successful writer. And it's so true that like a lot of very like a lot of undiscovered talent and a lot of very, very wonderful writers really do this like amazing thing where they, you know, work two part-time jobs and then come home and every night write from 8 p.m. to 1 in the morning. And hats off to them.
Yeah.
But I think that a lot of the time we're not comparing ourselves to that. We're reading these books that tell us what Vladimir Nabokov did and kind of being like, well, that's the standard. That's nice the point him. To hit. And it's sort of this like, no, that's the point to hit when you're a tenured academic professor that is a successful novelist on the side.
And I think the thing to keep in mind whenever you're sort of absorbing this writing advice about regular writing and making it a habit is making whatever process you use part of who you are and not using like the fact that you're working two part-time jobs as an excuse to never write.
Exactly.
You know, mm-hmm. because
well said.
I think that there is sort of that like self-sabotaging Gollum voice that you have. That's just like, if I can't do exactly what Stephen King does, then what am I even doing here? Right. You know,
all or nothing.
Exactly.
Like if you can't do it all the way, don't even get
then
in the
why
ring.
Why am I trying? If I, you know, I asked you the question about,
don't listen to that Gollum voice, guys. That's
it's a bad voice.
Wrong voice.
Notice it as the Gollum voice, not as the truth. Like notice it as something that has nothing good to say. And not something that you should actually do.
And what I was going to say is that, you know, I asked you the question about, do you journal consistently? Because I've never been able to done that. And
I've not done that either.
No, and I think, like, I probably had an easier time focusing in class and sitting still than you did. But, like, I've never been able to journal.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I wonder if you have a picture of what you think journaling is, and if you looked at my journal, if it would match up with that
probably
at all.
Probably not.
Because it's never, like, Dear Diary.
Yeah.
It's very much more, and I'm trying to remember who I'm modeling when I say this, but I remember back in, like, 10th grade, I had this English teacher who really kicked our butts. And, like, we had to write a 13-page pre-write before we ever put our first word down on the essay we'd hand in.
Wow.
And that was also graded. So it was this like really, really rigorous process. She was actually also a Wesleyan alum.
Nice.
But she gave me like, I think it was in her class, gave us all like a couple pages out of the author we were reading's journal. And it was just random bullet points, observations, just things that like, they noticed through the course of their day.
Yeah. Right.
And that's a little bit more what my journal looks like.
Sure.
Just like observations.
But which is phenomenal. And I think like the fact that you do that and sort of tying it back to the weird story we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Like do it on your terms, you know?
Yes.
You just have to write on your terms and not use like other people's process or the situation that you're in or sort of the world at large as sort of a justification or an excuse to not write on your terms.
Right. And I think that it's like not to throw away other like ideas or wisdom, like other people's wisdom I think the point is to be experimental and be like less judgmental. And
yeah,
so like,
totally.
You know, there's no problem in taking the hack that you read from whoever and trying it. But when it doesn't work, not being like, I'm the worst, being like, that didn't work for me, and trying something new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the hardest part for me attentionally, and I think most people that I talk to who experience anything like attention deficit disorder or whatever words, you know, for that kind of neurodivergence you would use, is starting.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the hardest thing for myself and for most of the people I talk to is taking the box off the shelf and opening it and getting into it.
Right.
And, you know, setting aside that first chunk of time that's then like the first domino push that like builds momentum on the project.
Right.
And I know for me, it's like the reason it gets down to that last weekend is because I just haven't started.
You haven't started. Yep.
Yeah,
I've like outlined, I've like done process stuff. I've thought about it. I've stressed about it. I've ate over it.
Yeah.
You've done what Sarah and I call the useful procrastination.
Yes, right.
Where exactly. I'll
watch
the
episode of, of Avatar The Last Airbender to like, you know, map out like, what did they do? And I'll do all the sort of supplemental work. And it's like the second I sit down and like open the app that I will write in and not close until it's written, like that's when things start to happen. And so it's like there are interesting things that I've like learned about and tried that help sometimes, but none of them are a panacea or a silver bullet. Like things like Pomodoros, where you set a 20 some odd minute timer and you only write during that time. Then you take a 5 minute break and you come back and do 20 minutes. Like, that's been incredibly useful sometimes when I just need to rip a Band-Aid.
Yeah.
And I like really want to baby myself through like, you know, the first couple pages just to get some momentum going.
Yeah.
But then that doesn't work sometimes. And it's like the place I go that's unproductive is screw me. The place I go that actually gets me out of the cave is like, what next?
Sure.
Sure.
No, and I think that there's a very real... like that Gollum voice is the loudest when it's when you've created the like Word document and it's saved onto your document file, but you're staring at that blank page and there's like, and the cursor is just like blinking
taunting
at the
you.
Top of the page. Right. That is the voice. That is the time when like the Gollum voice is like, oh, look, there was a megaphone here the entire time. Now we can really get this party started. At least for me personally, like that is kind of like the moment when, yeah, like you said, like that is the moment that takes me the longest. Like, I have definitely had writing projects where going from finished outline to first word on the page took longer than anything else. And I'm not sure why that is, but yeah, but there is kind of a like real...
yeah.
resistance, and there's a real
friction and fear.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
We dunked on him earlier, but Nabokov talks about this, of there being like sort of two modes of writing and Russian words that I can't remember off the top of my head. But like one is this sort of unbounded sense of play, where the idea is diffuse and everything is possible. And then there's the rigor and the stress and the blood and the tears of actually defining it, and that's a different phase of writing.
Right.
And moving from one to the other is like kind of the hardest thing.
Wow.
And
it's like a quantum state. Like, how do you is there a like linear incremental process that you go through to get from one to the other, or is it just like a zero to a one magically?
I don't know what his answer would be.
In
I know that like my
my
cheat is that I'll often I'll often sneak dialogue into an outline, and then I'll put it into the Word doc so that like I have like an exchange between two characters already there that I like, and maybe it'll change and maybe I won't keep it, but there's something there, it isn't blank, and so that way it's less scary.
No, this is, I was about to say, like, this is, I think that like for the two of us, we've gotten better and better at tricking our brains into starting, because for a while it was just like, okay, we have an outline. And then for a while for me, it kind of became like, I'm going to do like an outline, and then I'm going to do kind of a fleshed out version of the outline. And then for me, it then became like, I'm going to do like a really fleshed out version of the outline that has some description and some like dialogue. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, look, that is suddenly like much closer to a first draft than to an outline. And then the latest hack is that like, and I've been doing this with the thing that I've been working on, where for every chapter, the first thing that I'll do is I'll take like everything in the outline that refers to that chapter and paste it onto the Word doc underneath where I'm writing, so that yes, like there's a lot of ground to cover, but like, look, like there's so much on the page already, like you've started,
right?
And then, you know,
and
as,
it's like fill it in,
and no. as it gets written, it gets deleted off the bottom, and
the
it gets
thing.
Translated
that's the
yes.
thing that's most satisfying, is when I'm writing, I will have the outline in a separate doc, and as I do a point, I get to kill that point on the separate doc and watch one document get bigger and one document get smaller, and it's the best thing in the world.
You
That's
guys,
really cool.
You guys remember that, slash, did you ever read that Shel Silverstein book, The Missing Piece?
Yeah.
So I feel that, like, the process of writing, but especially the process of starting writing for me right now, is analogous to kind of like what that, like, missing piece goes through, of kind of like, I want to get rolling, but I can't because I'm shaped this way.
Right.
And I'm going to kind of try all of these things that come along to see which things are the things that get me rolling the fastest. And for a while, you know, something will come along that you can kind of interface with and it gets you rolling, but it's sort of this like very imperfect roll and you're kind of like clanking and stopping every like 2 minutes because it's all jagged and uneven.
Yeah.
And you do that for a while and you're like, okay, it's very bad, but like I'm moving forward. And then another thing will come along and you're going to be like, okay, I'm going to drop this thing that I'm already interfacing with where it's like kind of a not great fit already, and I'm going to try this other one. And it's a little bit better, but it's still like pretty clanky and pretty like bad. And you kind of like, as you go forward, you keep trying new things and you keep just kind of like finding better and better fits for things that get you rolling. And the dream is that eventually you do it enough time and you put enough effort into it that
you can just go 0 to 60 on the drop of a dime.
And that you kind of change your own shape. You kind of learn how you need to be so that you can roll on your own. But I feel that right now I'm kind of in the middle of that process of like, I've discarded some hacks that were, that worked, but barely.
Right.
You know, that were like almost non-starters, but they started just like the tiniest little bit.
Right.
And now I'm kind of at things that are like, Lord, this needs work, but like we're moving forward. Like we get to places. It's kind of a very bumpy ride, but it gets us there.
Yeah.
And maybe one day it'll be sort of this like, no, like I can just do it now. That's the dream.
Gotta have dreams.
If you haven't read The Missing Piece by Shel Silverstein,
it's really
good. It's really good.
I guess like the last thing that I'll contribute that I feel like for the person who's sitting here being like, this has all been nice, but I have ADHD and I want advice.
Right. Sure.
And I'm like, you know, I think, and to sort of speak to that, like one of the things that I've found that is less of a hack and more of a principle that I've just been sort of applying. I used the word heuristic earlier. I've been hanging. Steve, you broke my brain. My friend Steve Gross has some cool ideas about learning. But anyway, I think environment is super important. And this is something that I thought more about meditation and like, you know, what's the difference between sort of learning to meditate in your room in Brooklyn and New York where there's like cars going by versus in the mountains. And like, you know, it's like nice to have an ideal environment. And there are some real like principles for why having a quiet environment is really supportive for that. And you can get to like 80% of the results with 20% of the mountains, you know, like you don't have to like, you know, actually need to leave your environment to do that. And I think a lot of people don't start learning to meditate like because they have that picture of it has to be perfect.
Sure.
And I think similarly, like with writing, there are several different environments for different kinds of writing. Like I love that, like there's the possibility sort of side and then there's the practicality side, you know, sort of two different gears that Nabokov had. And I definitely feel like there are times when I need to be alone and in silence to like really book. But when I'm not quite at booking yet, like it's really helpful in some instances to like be in a crowded place, like a coffee shop where there's like lots of other people doing other things. And I feel embarrassed going to YouTube and I just have no place to run. And I'm like kind of like blocking out other things, which then actively, which then forces my attention in a different way. So, so I think like experimenting with different environments for writing without any expectation of a page goal and just seeing where, like taking the pressure off of oneself to like produce something specific and just see what naturally emerges in different environments. And then noting that and like trying that when you are on a deadline, I think is what I would recommend for anybody who's attentionally divergent, ADD, whatever you would call it.
To leap onto the end of that, something that, like I had a similar process in college or a similar moment rather of I shouldn't do work in my room because this is my room. This is where I unwind. This is where I, you know, like relax after a long day. And if I decide that instead of working on this essay, I'm going to watch a YouTube video, there is so little to stop me. Whereas the moment that I'm kind of like, I'm doing work in the library, and this is now a space that like a lot of people have paid a lot of money so that it is here as a workspace for students, there's now a non-zero shame of your friend coming over and being like, hey, what are you doing in the library? Oh, you're watching a YouTube video. That's cool. Like, that really, really helped to sort of keep me focused. And when I ended up moving to New York, eventually the thing that ended up working out was like, I need a place that I know, like, I'm going to go do work. And more, unfortunately, slash fortunately, that place has become Starbucks Coffee. Because it is everywhere, it has available outlets, and if one is full, there will be another one.
A few blocks away in New York City. Yeah.
Whereas I know a lot of people who are like, my workspace is this gorgeous indie coffee shop in like the Lower East Side. And I'm like, that is fantastic, but that does not work for me. Because if that is my workspace and I show up there and there are no tables available.
Right.
Then the and first
they've locked
hour,
off the outlets because that's just how they make money with turnover. They
do. Yep. Then all of a sudden, I cannot do work. Like all of a sudden, the first 2 hours of my work shift are standing around waiting to get a table.
Right. For me, at this point, it's like I just need to leave my apartment. Have like, and this is not every day, but like, I just like have my like little box of note cards, my crazy little keyboard with like a screen built into it, and like my iPhone and a like USB battery, and that's like it. Yeah.
No, but like I think that there are real, like you were saying, like real environmental things that can contribute. Even something as simple as like, this is my work notebook as opposed to my everything else notebook. Yeah. This is my, like, guys, I know it sounds redonkulous, but like even something as simple as like, I'm putting on my work necklace. I'm putting on my work ring. I'm putting on my work hat.
Oh, no. Those are real things. Like putting on shoes to do work, even if you're working in your home.
Yeah.
So much more useful.
No.
Because you're just sort of, again, like tricking your brain into taking what you're doing seriously, as opposed to sort of letting it be like, I'm home. I can watch some Netflix if I want. Just whatever shame barriers you can put up, put them up.
And if you're like,
I had to use freedom.2 for a while, the thing that like blocks your internet selectively. So I like literally couldn't load certain websites.
And if you're like me, some part of your brain right now is going, that's a security blanket. You're not 6 years old. You don't need that. You should just be able to do it. That's the Gollum voice.
Right.
Don't listen to that voice. Yeah.
You're the worst. Gollum.
Hooray.
Hate that guy. But I also like, that's a sad character that I can just like.
It is.
Give
it
a
is
mental a hug to.
Exactly.
Smeagol is different.
Yes.
From Gollum.
No, and I think that like more and more, the more that we talk at the end of this show, the more that we are coming back to, it's all just about figuring out your own terms and what works best for you.
Yep.
And only beating yourself up for turning away from your own terms and not for having those terms be different from everyone else's.
And it takes time and it takes patience. And I think all of us are still sort of figuring out what our terms are.
Yes.
And if you are able to not beat up on yourself during that process of exploration, call me. I want to learn your secrets.
Please come be a guest on the show. Tell us your ways.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.